Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the members segment of the Cosmic Switchboard Show with a very special guest, Professor Daryl Hamamoto. We had a very interesting and engaging discussion in the first segment about a variety of topics. We're just getting started, so without any further ado, Daryl Hamamoto, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you very much, James. And right off the bat here, I have a special treat for your members of the Cosmic Switchboard. Just to show you that this information was always here. It was occluded or occulted. It was pushed off the attention screen, the radar there, by the whole GLBTQ race, critical race theory people, James. But it's there, and I'm posting this on my Patreon free. You don't have to enroll. Just look for Daryl Y. Hamamoto Patreon. And you can download for free this article from the esteemed journal Annals of Science, Volume 66, Number 1, January 2009. And the title, you're going to love it, ladies and gentlemen, Entering Dubious Realms, Grover Krantz, Science and Sasquatch by Professor of History Brian Regal. And talks about an individual I didn't know. He was a physical anthropologist, Grover Krantz, 1931 to 2002. Quoting very quickly, spent his career arguing that the anomalous North American primate called Sasquatch was a living animal. And then it goes, that's part of the abstract. So that's for your a special premium for supporting James Bartley and being one of the privileged members of Cosmic Switchboard. You're in the right place. And we're going to have an interesting second part two, for members only.
That's right. You gave us a lot to think about in the first segment, and delving deeper into the cryptozoological aspects of this and the fact that we know from studies of the lore of the various cultures around the world, the cosmologies of the various cultures, that there's always been this emphasis on the gods, if you will. Depending on the culture, the fairies, the wee folk, whatever one wants to call them, having an insatiable appetite for procreation with human females, and thus begat this hybrid, what we would now call hybrid mm-hmm. race, demigods in the olden days that were endowed with all these abilities and powers, and some of them wound up, you know, being in positions of power and influence, and we see that today, all across the board. What are your thoughts about that? And from the perspective of the East, because we have enough people out there talking about this from a Western perspective, but just from your perspective and this forum that you're going to be mm-hmm. having, which is a great idea of this Pan-Pacific kind of discussion group, I think that's marvelous.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's fairly strong anthropological evidence that the imperial household of Japan are not part of the indigenous bloodlines of Japanese people. And as you mentioned at the outset, their whole legitimacy rests upon supernatural origins from the sun god Amaterasu and a whole cosmology that posits an unbroken bloodline. And the only such bloodline in existence today in 2021 of imperial households. That's what they're claiming, and that's their legend. Whether true or not, well, you know, that's to be determined. But that's the signal power. It always rests on, as you mentioned earlier, on a supernatural source of legitimacy. Not only the sword, not just the musket and the gun or the atomic bomb. That's just physical. Right, main force in trying to impose a certain type of regime. It always devolves back down to a supernatural understanding of your legitimacy. That's why it's so important to want to look at it. You don't get that in political science, in international relations, or any other the social science or behavioral sciences. You will only get it from reading the, you know, literature, comparative literature, English, and mythology, all the different the offshoots of it. And those areas, like I mentioned before, they've been hijacked by this whole post-human transhumanist group. All we have to do is refocus ourselves. We're not digging up any new knowledge, just refocus. And I call it a radical epistemology, a way of knowing that foregrounds esoterica. And part of the constellation of esoteric knowledge is that which deals with animal-human hybrids or creatures that for, let's say, Native Americans or other people, it's not unusual, but for in our world, from our epistemology, it's unusual. And it has specific relevance, and this is why I wanted to talk about it, to the current media distraction put out by these British agents primarily, right, between the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, who not coincidentally have relocated to, guess where? Los Angeles, California, the home of the global consciousness industry, the movie, the entertainment industry. And you want to talk about political orthodoxy, James, you know as well as I do is that that's where they're concentrated. With a few exceptions, people who have fled, right? People like Randy Quaid, and you have the screenwriter David Mamet, who doesn't go along with it. Scott Adams, the cartoonist. You know, there are a number of people who see the world in our way, but the bulk of them are royalists, I think, elitists, and they disdain. Even though they seem to be on the side of humanity, being involved in anti-sexist, anti-racist causes, at bottom they're elitists. They share that cosmology, and so do the royals. So it's the height of a farce, and I think I don't know about most, but a lot of people see it as such. It's the height of farce when you have Meghan Markle claiming that she's being ostracized because her babies are a shade darker than their cousins, because they don't care. You know, for the general population, yeah, maybe the royals don't like people of different colors because, you know, they're interested in subjugating them, right? But when it comes to their own bloodlines, they don't mind. In fact, they want to exchange genetic material with all the different royal houses, nobility all over the world. And my discussion last Thursday on my show was that, and I have yet to confirm this, I'm operating on hunches and on just scant empirical information, that and again, I look at the maternal, just like in the case of Donald Trump and Melania Trump. I suspect very strongly that Meghan Markle is descendant from these ancient Lower Nile civilizations of Kush. She's a Nilotic African, Nubian, let's call it, right? And you can see Nubianism in the popular culture being promoted, especially in African American culture, rap, hip hop. You see that in this animated feature, right? Wakanda, Black Panther. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but they have this whole fetishization of Black African civilization in Egypt and some of the rappers and Public Enemy. And you see on YouTube, there's people, these Afrocentric street philosophers, I guess you can call them, right? It's very much in the popular culture. And I think Meghan Markle is a manifestation of that attempt to groom and cultivate that particular part of humanity in order to complete the extermination process that Victorian colonialism did not really fully realize. And not just Victorian, because remember the House of Coburn, right? I mean, the Belgians, they're the Congo, the Belgian Congo, they're related to the throne of England, and they're related to, you know, the Prince Tsar Nicholas. They're all interrelated. They're all part of this. They're called the breeding house, the nursery of Europe. It's the House of Coburn, right? Coburn, von Sachs Coburn, Habsburg people. So that's really what I think that show is about, that little hair pulling contest between Harry and Meghan. And it's not just for the rare earth minerals. like they're saying, oh, the Chinese are taking over Africa. They're hogging all their minerals and they're buying much of Australia. Yeah, true, true, true. But in the case of Meghan Markle and the attack on the Nilotic civilization, Lower Nile, which grabbed, had they had intercourse, cultural, social, political intercourse with Egypt, right? And then, Egypt, the Egyptian dynasties fell to the Ottomans, and the Ottomans, and there was a succession of civilizations. And of course, the British throne royalty, they see themselves as the heir to that long millennial process. And Meghan Markle is beloved by them. They brought her in to revitalize and to connect themselves with that lower Nilotic civilization, which merged with Egypt and the Ottomans and gravitated to the Venetians and the banking system over to England. And this notion that they're on the outs with them is a farce. There's no argument there. It's a stage sort of interfamilial spat, I guess, that who's pimping it out for the public? It's Oprah Winfrey, another person who was inducted in order to publicize, just like these individuals, right? We already figured who they are, right? And they don't look like Oprah type people, so they have to have Oprah to do the job for them. That's my assessment. The person who did pose a challenge to the legitimacy of the Habsburg line that sits on the throne was Princess Diana, and we knew what happened to her.
I was just thinking about that because isn't it interesting that Diana kind of, in a way, it was a precursor to the Harry Merkel psychodrama, but Diana got paired up with a guy who was literally an Egyptian, right, if memory serves,
Dodi
and
Fayyad.
then that's him, and then, of course, she breaks away from the royal family, understandably, all the trauma that she was subjected to and everything else,
She called
the
them the
things that she's seen.
reptiles.
She called them the reptiles. She calls them the lizards. And then, of course, she gets assassinated, and there's this huge emotional upheaval all over the world. But you had that conjoining once again of old Europe with even the older Egyptian civilization.
Yes.
And then now, when you're bringing up Merkel, that honestly, Daryl, that was an angle I never thought
She's
about,
a Nubian. She's a
because
Nubian princess.
she's a Nubian, and all that implies because they have their own cultural lore, they have their own esoteric mystical traditions, and in a way, I mean, you look over to the Horn of Africa, there was the parallel story of. Is that where the Ark of the Covenant really came from? Was it this Christian, if you want to call it that, sect in Ethiopia, that part of the world, Abyssinia, some of the old names
Oh,
for it.
yeah.
So when we're talking about Merkel and her bloodline, it's a way of, in a very public way, in conjunction with the pop culture once again, bringing up this whole issue of, and I used to read the Black Panther comic books when I was a kid.
Ah, yeah,
So they've created
okay.
this idealized version of this super advanced African culture that somehow
Wakanda.
Wakanda developed independently of the confining, controlling, constricting West, right? So they've created this mythos of this idealized society, but then it tracks back to the ancient Lower Nile civilization and its connection to ancient Egypt, connection with the Seleucid dynasty, with Alexander's successors, and et cetera.
Absolutely.
So it's all tied in, Daryl.
And the Hebrew tribes. Her father ostensibly is a Jew, right? And the mother is black. Is that how, or is it the other way around? There's a Hebrew element. There's a Hipiru element there that goes back. It has nothing to do with contemporary Judaism. It's that tribal, nomadic, Hebrew precursor to modern Judaism that she's part of this royal bloodline. I believe, and they aren't.
Yes.
See, they didn't have our idea of race and class is a creation of the 1950s civil rights movement in Africa. They didn't share that same epistemological outlook. They weren't racist in our terms. They would marry with Egypts, Black Africans, Jews, whatever. You know, that was really the African experience and the Mediterranean experience.
There were Roman generals that were full-blooded Africans.
There you go, Africanus.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. I mean, even in modern times, you know, Alexandre Dumas, you know, of the Three Musketeers, his mother was a Haitian slave or a servant or something. So the point is that all the stuff about race and class and AOC, they're just pounding it over again. It's just a synthetic creation. Civilizations did not recognize these boundaries.
But from a reptilian hybridized perspective, they recognize their own, even if it comes in the guise of someone of a different color. Like there was a guy for many years in the Bilderberg meetings. He was a crony of Henry Kissinger's, Vernon Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
A guy that was as black can be.
Yes.
But he was always there, always a shaker and mover behind the scenes. Once in a while, you get a glimpse of him.
Yeah.
You know, a telephoto lens shot of him. That was about all you knew about the guy, except there he was.
He was very close to William Jefferson Clinton, too.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
There are many pictures of them in the golf cart together.
Well, the African dynamic behind this, and because we know within the context of the genetic profile, the magic, if you will, in the blood and the bloodlines.
Yes.
And then the whole concept, because human sacrifice, the blood rituals are universal. They can be found in every culture around the world, and it's particularly strong in Africa. And so I think in a way, by bringing Merkel into the fold and having offspring from that union, and also just
Merkel,
tapping into her genetics.
Merkel, not Angela Merkel. Megan Merkel.
Yeah.
I'm just so we don't confuse the German lady with the Nubian princess.
That's right. I'm getting my New World Order proxies mixed up.
Okay.
Merkel.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a way of bringing in that magical dynamic into the fold as well.
Darryl. I think you're onto something, James. This is something that you and your membership need to really dig into. Now, there's another dimension. If this were not enough, I mean, what a revelation, Meghan Markle as a Nubian president. We just thought she was a poor minority in America who's been slighted with the household. No, man, it's always deeper than that, right? There's another dimension, James. You mentioned Princess Diana. Diana, right? She was from the House of Stuart. She was the legitimate heir to the British throne, not these German, really Teutonic tribal people, usurpers that were brought in, right? But she was going to settle for Dodi al-Fayyad, his father's fabulously rich Egyptian. He even bought Harrods department store in London, right? But they didn't really take him seriously. You know, he's a parvenu. He's just sort of an interloper. The one that they were really concerned about, the royal household was concerned about, was Dr. Hasnat Khan, Khan. He was a surgeon, I believe, in London. And we're talking about bloodlines now. He is part of the Aga Khan bloodline. And this is one of my contributions, James, and people who want to watch my YouTube will talk about, or will learn that, you know, you have Fritz Springmeier, right? He talked about the bloodlines of Illuminati. And the only non-Western one is the House of Li, as in Li Ka-Shing. But I'm adding the Middle Eastern, the Near Eastern element, the South Asian element, and that's the House of Khan. That's the Aga Khan. And the Aga Khan, the current one today, claims unbroken descendants from Mohammed. And it was Ali Khan who was the playboy who married the Hollywood stars like Rita Hayworth, right? He was a playboy back in the 30s and 40s. And, you know, you see that in Hollywood. You know, Grace Kelly was brought in from Hollywood to breed with Prince Rainier of Monaco. They were the breeding stock, right? And it's no accident that Meghan Markle, you know, supposedly started out as an actress. Anyway, Princess Diana Spencer was hitting it with Dr. Hasnat Khan. She would spend time, you know, this is, I think, even before she was formally divorced, at his house. And they were very close. She desperately wanted to marry him. He didn't want to do it because of all the glare of publicity that's going to haunt him and follow him everywhere. While he was a successful surgeon, that was his real obsession, as being the best. I think he was a neurosurgeon, right? And she kind of the reading, because I have one of the largest libraries about Princess Diana that I know of for a straight man, you know. I've read all the books, so that's why I know all the smut and all the gossip, right? But she kind of picked up Dodi Fayyad on the rebound to make Dr. Hasnat Khan jealous. But the larger point is that he is part of the Ismaili. The Aga Khan is the Ismaili, and the Ismaili is more commonly known as the assassins, the Hashashin. And they were mostly in what today is Pakistan, right? But they were also heavy in India. And the Ismailis were very loyal to Queen Victoria, and they helped
Yes.
to pimp out their native peoples in their country to the British Empire. So that's how that bloodlines works out. Now, so ladies and gentlemen, check out the Ismaili, especially check out the Aga Khan. That is a very important bloodline of the Illuminati that you won't find on YouTube, which has become a giant echo chamber of plagiarists.
Indeed. And you
You
look
need to
at the
subscribe to the Cosmic Switchboard to get the
Yes,
original
please.
upstream information, the bird's eye load on the fresh material. This is it. YouTube is an echo because they're getting rid of all the good people. It's just a bunch of biters on. You
Yeah,
can tell it.
simulators that get all this information from all these other sources, repackage it, and voila, here it is,
Exactly.
supposedly new and improved, but
Right. For newbies, yeah, you need to look at that. But James, the people are your subscribers. They've been there and done that. And they're looking for some new insight. We want to take the ball forward. We want solutions here. We want new information, new insights, new analytical approaches. That's what you're going to get at a cosmic switchboard.
When you were talking about this Khan character, and we know that from a Victorian, and then you can add on OTO Golden Dawn perspective on top of that, because as you know, like these local governors that were sent out and these big shots working for the East India Trading Company, etc., a lot of them were steeped in the esoteric, so they would have been deeply interested in the local magical traditions and the local bloodlines. Oh, how did this guy wind up being a prince or a king or a chieftain or whatever? Usually had to do with, from their own perspective, these magical rituals and anointings and what have you. I couldn't help but thinking, leading up to the time of the partition, which created a whole another can of worms of violence and what have you between India, what became Pakistan, wasn't Lizard Boy, Lord Mountbatten, pimping out his own wife to Nehru, to get this kind of get the ball rolling on the partition and get the ball rolling, and the way they divided the subcontinent was they made sure that there were going to be these oppressed minorities in one side or the other, just like Kashmir, for example, just like
One
a
Hindu, one Muslim.
one Hindu, one Muslim, just like a permanent flashpoint. So that was like the Brits' parting gift, Daryl. It's like, we're just going to leave you with all this chaos and just leave you to stew in your own juices, right?
Right. And we don't care if we're not physically ruling over you. We'll still own you because we've created the conditions of squalor that'll last generations. And we'll just take the best and brightest of you and bring you to Britain, educate you at Oxford and Cambridge, and you'll become part of what I call the servitors of empire. And we'll send you back there to rule over the squalor. That's
And
what America is becoming.
that's what America's become. And look what, like the UK, for example, Britain, is unrecognizable from an Anglo-Saxon perspective. Large parts of it's like London Stan, right? So you have this secret conjoining between, in our example, Diana and this Khan character. But on the other, with the unlimited immigration, they've transplanted hordes of Pakistanis and people from the subcontinent, radically changed the face of English culture, installed a number of these Muslims as mayors to run the councils, etc., etc. So Yeah, that's where the twain has met. It's like a radical resurfacing of traditional European society. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing the same thing in America, because I grew up in San Jose, like I said. And you can see just by the demographic and the ethnicity around you, as you know, Daryl, it's like, where was America's military involvement, right? Well, mm-hmm. you know, Spanish-American War, you know, Filipino, they liberated yeah. 3 million of us, extinguished us. And, you know, they, like many others, they gave my dad an option. Okay, well, you can join the U.S. Navy. And then, you know, you can be a U.S. citizen. Before the ink was even dry, he was going up and down the Mekong Delta in a little patrol boat, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why there's so many flips in California. Then you look around, Southeast Asians. Well, of course, you have the Southeast Asian involvement. So mm-hmm. they bring in hordes of them. And then what happens is you have all these Somalis. Well, there was a Somali intervention, right? In another part of the world. So the one thing I must say is, at least for some, there was this core element. I was just delighted to see these Vietnamese that were like rallying in support of Donald Trump, and they were wearing the Trump MAGA colors and whatever anyone wants to say about Trump, right? But mm-hmm. The fact that these people were saying, look, we came from a communist country. We know what it's like. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. at least, you know, there is this core element of people, Cubans in Miami, who know what communism is all about, some people mm-hmm. from Southeast Asia who know what it's all about. So at least within that demographic milieu, there are people that will say, oh, wait a minute, all this cultural stuff is not all it's cracked up to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They're only, as I mentioned at the top side here, their children, right, the refugee people, populations, the immigrant population, their parents want them to go to university. They go to university, and it's run by a bunch of, you know, communists and Marxists. And in order to succeed and to get the grades, they have to adopt, you know, they don't have to internalize it, but they have to get their GPAs by internalizing mostly left propaganda. But I'm saying is that we're going to break that chain. It's only been there for 30 years. It's my generation of Marxists, because before it was Americana. The university was Americana until the 60s, where the descendants of the Bolsheviks who migrated to the U.S. became professors and medical and bureaucrats, and they also became the financiers. You know, they became the owners, because that's all communism is to concentrate the wealth so that it can go to their families on Wall Street. It's nothing about spreading the wealth. That generation is aging out. Thank good. You know, they're like Bernie Sanders, right? They're pretty much on the way out. They have a younger cohort that they're trying to groom, like AOC, but she just doesn't have the intellectual or the physical gravitas or ability to really carry it forward. So that's dying out. That leaves, guess what, Jane? I'll repeat it. That leaves a huge opening for us. A huge opening. Donald Trump's people, of course, they were all against him, you know, his inner circle had no conception of it. If he had only sat down with you, James Bartley, Daryl Hamamoto, people who understand the esoteric tradition and understand the incredible asset that was going unused for 4 years, that shares the same bed with him, Melania Trump. My gosh, there would have been a different outcome. But it's not too late. We can still salvage what remains of freedom, not just in the United States of America, but throughout the world, if we just shift the focus back where it belongs. We don't have to rebuild anything. It's already there. Just reshift the focus, just like setting the light, okay? Yeah, I'm in dark, okay? I have to have the light here. It's the same. Nothing's changed, except I've just shifted the light source. It's the same way with knowledge.
And if nothing else, there's been a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth, as you know, Daryl, where people are screaming, Trump didn't do enough, he abandoned us. Well, you know,
right.
he showed in a way that no one else could have just how corrupt this just us system is. It's not a justice system, as you know, mm-hmm. all the way to the Supreme Court. Okay, you can check that off. Forget about the white hats and the justice system.
Right.
And in all these different areas, the state legislatures, the governors, his vice president, all shown to be a bunch of crooks and criminals, this inbred Luciferian hybridized cabal. So anyone who still has faith in the system and the voting system, it's no, that's an old paradigm of control. We need to move away from that locally and just, you know, branch out like cells everywhere of like-minded people that can interact. And even in a COVID or a post-COVID world, your mm-hmm. plan has a lot of merit because it's not reliant upon international travel. As long as people can set up these networks in their own communities where it all starts anyway, right?
Absolutely. And it begins with, you mentioned the Croatian immigrants to Australia. It begins with, you know, as we used to call it in Hawaii, talking story, sharing, you know, what is your family background? Just write it down and record it and transcribe it. It's, you know, my message today is that your story, not just James Barley, but the people who are listening here, your stories are very important. It needs to be recorded. It needs to be heard. Most people don't think of themselves as a historical actor. They're seeing themselves as an observer, someone who's acted upon. No, shift the focus to you. And I want to know about your grandparents in Croatia. I want to know about Melania's great grandparents as they were living under the Habsburgs, or maybe even under the Ottoman Empire. Well, think of that. You know, the Ottomans were running her land, her forefathers for, I don't know, it was about 150 years, 200, something like that. I mean, it had a Muslim influence there. And then the communists came in, you know. She had to be baptized in secret, Melania Knobs, okay? That's how deeply they were oppressed. Those stories are important. That's why we have fiction. That's why we have mythology. That's why we have cinema. That's why we have narrative music. And everybody's story is important, not just the kings and the royals and the presidents, the celebrities, the CEOs. Yeah, I read them. It's interesting. But everyday people, that's the history of civilization right there.
Well, there are a lot of, one usually has to pay a fee for it, but there are a lot of interviews, oral transcripts from a lot of these historical figures, politicians, military figures, going back, you know, to World War II days. They just pulled them aside and got the tape recorder going, and they talked about a wide variety of subjects. And then we can't lose that oral tradition, Daryl, because everything smacks of censorship. Everything smacks of trolling and doxing and all this other stuff that's going on. People need to be able to speak freely. And we talked about the issue of race too. And mm-hmm. race really has no place in cryptozoological studies or in esoteric studies. Because let me give you an example. There are a number of, let's say, anomalous features in New Zealand, which all kinds of obscure, unknown writing and script that are being found on the rocks and whatnot. And the local Maori people feel threatened because one could make a cogent argument that it's possible whoever left these inscriptions may have been Caucasian even. They may have been what we would call white. So there's an element within, you know, the Maori population and the Maori elders, oh, no, let's kind of, you know, poo-poo this. And then like in Tibet and in parts of China, there are huge pyramids there. And the Chinese Communist government for so long has made an effort to keep that information suppressed because they don't want to give the idea, well, these dynastic pharaohs were here way back when. Well, right. You know, the pyramid is a universal structure. You'll find pyramids on other planets, right? Mm-hmm. But the fact that there were, you know, these communists in particular go to such trouble to eradicate
the past.
And
they weren't Han people.
They weren't Han people, right?
Yeah.
So we need to get past this notion of, you know, who we are and this, you know, real parochialism mm-hmm. and just have more of a true universal outlook instead of this fake globalist, you know, global village, but we're all divided by race mentality, which they're pushing on everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the ultimate irony is that this whole multiculturalist paradigm was put in, out there, and never in human history have there been more people at war with each other. Supposedly it was going to create a harmonious human community, right? But the opposite has happened. So it's obviously not working. And so I'm proposing an alternative, I think a practical one. And even better, I think the bulk of humanity is ready for this. Like you said, maybe it took the fake election of 2020 to get at least Americans, but a lot of people around the world to realize that, hey, it's on us. It's really about us, not about these elective officials, these regulatory agencies, or presidents or kings. We do it just like days of old, within the family, within the community, within the village. And we have the wherewithal resources. We just do not have the level of self-understanding yet, which we'll get to take us to that place. But and I'm optimistic that we'll get there.
I am too, and there's a small sample size to be sure, Daryl, but we're seeing more people, especially with, and I'm not a big fan of this whole disclosure concept, because whatever bone military-industrial secret society cabal throws at us in regards to aliens, it's not going to be what we know to be, have a good understanding of what's really going on. This hybridized reptilian elite ruling over us and pitting against each other and literally using us as a food source and depopulating us, and with the intention of merging us perhaps into a quantum cloud for those of us that survive the whole ordeal. But the point of relevance is more and more of these what I call surface level researchers and activists are open to the fact that there seems to be a non-human element about this. It's starting to creep out in the comments of Alex Jones. It's starting to creep out in the comments of Mike Adams over at naturalnews.com. And they're more open to the notion. I never had any real qualms with, from the Christian biblical perspective, especially from the Christian spiritual warrior perspective, that a lot of these archontic beings, we would call them, they're just merely demons. Well, if they're comfortable looking at them from that perspective, and that these demons have had this malign influence on humanity, that's fine. I'd rather align myself or at least have a discourse with someone like that than some starry-eyed New Ager who thinks that all aliens are warm and fuzzy and, we're all just on some never-ending champagne cruise, right, to Ascension Land. I'd rather, interact with like a Christian spiritual warrior, right? So more people are starting to recognize that we are not at the top of the food chain. There are unseen elements, non-human, and the cryptozoological aspect is a big part of that, because these reptilians, for example, there's whole societies of them. They live in some of them in large underground cavern systems. I guess they're cryptids too, right? So when people can look at it from that perspective, that in a very real Middle Earth perspective, like in Tolkien lore, right? This world is populated by all kinds of different critters, and we're just one of them.
Yeah. Different non-human species that have a vague resemblance to them. And I'm glad you're sensing that, James, because I'm sensing the same deal. I'm also sensing them amongst my colleagues. I have a dear colleague of mine in my ex-department who was so inspired by our conversations, and because she didn't want to talk about it, because you're going to be ostracized, you're not going to get a promotion or tenure or whatever if you deal with certain areas. But she was so inspired by it. She developed a course called The Spirit Realm, and there's tons of undergraduates in there. I mean, they're under lockdown, so they do it online instruction, but she has a huge body of undergraduates who are there interested. Like I told you, the young people, and ironically, it's coming from the video games, because they're looking at pagan society and Middle Earth and Vikings and Game of Thrones and pre-Christian civilization, from video games and movies, and they want to study this, and they want to study the religious and the spiritual traditions, because that yearning never goes away. So she has this course, incredible, and readings. So I am also seeing this happening, at least within my limited area. And
Kudos
so
to
let's push
you.
that advantage.
Yeah,
Pardon me?
kudos to you for being a beneficial influence for her to take the initiative and do this. Because from a soul perspective, stripped of all the hindrances and blockages and mind control, that's what we want to know. So
Yeah.
when these kids, and I'm one of the last of the baby boomers, born in 64, right, in November. So when these kids have this yearning and it manifests in Dungeons and Dragons or it manifests in video games, but that can be tapped into, hey, there's a huge, huge universe of this kind of information available. You just have to seek it. And here it is. This colleague of yours is creating a course for it, which is fantastic.
Well, unfortunately, she had to go through a very dark place. She had to go to hell, literally, before she could come to back to the surface to bring this knowledge and this insight and create this course for her students. She went through this process of tenure hell, and I went through it with her. I was her only supporter in the department, so we had a lot of conversations. And during the winter break, she put her last appeal in because she was denied tenure and promotion. She put her appeal in, and she was pregnant at the time. And just the relief of stress forced her into a spontaneous abortion. She lost her child, and she almost bled to death. She was clinically dead for 5 hours and went to hell and came back because she had two children that she needed to take care of. She wrote a good article about it, by the way. It's incredible. We're still in conversation there. And coincidentally, I found this, we're talking about academic, journal. That's, my world. There's an academic journal called the Journal of Near-Death Experience that I didn't even know existed since 1985. This is an this is, These are MDs. These are not quacks. These are doctoral level people from all over the world who said there's something called a near, just for the sake of convenience, called near death. We're going to study this from a science perspective. And I include that as part of this, what I'm calling crypto studies and new world order studies. So again, to your point, James, are things moving ahead? Are they changing for the better? Yeah, they are. I'm not, this is not wishful thinking on my part. I'm just seeing this, and I know people who've been through this journey. From very extreme cases, like my colleague who now has the course in the spirit realm. By the way, would you like to interview her on Cosmic Switchboard?
I would love to.
Okay,
You talk about the Joseph Campbell hero's journey, the heroine's
yeah, I
journey.
mean,
There it
let
is.
her tell you her story herself. My gosh. And yeah, women are really under attack. And it's so ironic to say, oh, this is the decade of the women, AOC and Kamala Harris, and we're going to push you to the front, and you're going to be equal. Well,
Transgender wrestlers are cracking the skulls of female wrestlers, and
exactly.
all this stuff is going on, and there's not a feminist in sight to complain about it.
Right, and they're aborting babies and sterilizing women with mRNA back, the story. And we're not having it anymore. Not just me, not just you, but a large segment of the population. Even those people who were once upon a time considered themselves to be social liberal, social justice, and whatever self-identified, Democrat, which are just superficial levels. So I'm seeing this movement. I'm seeing the, and I was ahead of my time. That's why I ran into trouble at the university. But fortunately, because of technology, we're talking, miles and miles away in different time zones. It's not going to take me 10 years to the other side to realize, oh, he was right. Hamamoto was talking all kinds of crazy stuff back in 2010. No, it's only happened within the last couple of years that most of these colleagues who tried to drum me out realized that they were the fools and that they were being played. And I managed to leave that environment before it all closed in and went into lockdown. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's one of the practical advantages of perception, of intelligence,
And
of foresight.
kudos to your colleagues that were able to see the light, because so many are maladaptive, so many are dogmatic to the bone, and this is all across the profession. It's not just in the academic world,
Absolutely.
because they're.
We have to deprogram the people who are in the criminal justice system, all those attorneys, district attorneys, and people, the judicial system, the people in the courts, the federal, the governmental bureaucracies. Because remember, those people are the second, third generation of this whole SJW curriculum that's been in place since at least since probably the early 70s. I mean, I think I was a product of it myself
Well,
since the early 70s.
I went to San Jose State in the 1991 time frame, and I
There you
had the
go.
sociology professor, and I didn't know why he was doing it, but he kept spelling women WOMYN,
Yes.
and finally I just had to ask him. It's like, why do you spell it like this? And he said, well, just to not give offense to women, right? So even way back when, the curriculum was being skewed in a certain way. I remember I took a Chinese modern Chinese history course with a guy that even boasted about his links to intelligence, and he got to know people like Walt Rostow, whose brother Eugene Rostow was a dyed-in-the-wood communist, but Walt was the national security advisor. Go figure, right? So this guy is my Chinese history professor, and all the books that we were assigned to read, Mao was a great guy, Chiang was a scumbag. Okay, Chiang was, Chiang Kai-shek wasn't a perfect guy, but he didn't wipe out millions of his own countrymen either, right? You take the good with the bad. So now, with the benefit of hindsight, I can look back and I can see how that was playing out. And to me, it's thrilling that what used to be an enclave of this leftist, destroy America, destroy society, mentality. There's starting to be people that are starting to wake up and in their own way start to, pull away from that orbit, right? And hopefully we'll see more of that, because as we detach from the system of control and censorship and propaganda, more and more people are setting up their own BitChute accounts. More and more people are setting up these platforms, which eventually we may have to do because of the level of censorship, Daryl.
Well, this endowed chair that I talked about at the beginning of this conversation is a public announcement that era is over. We're going into New World Order studies, crypto studies, and it's going to be funded, and it's going to bring into all these different streams that are coming into forming to a river, and that river is forming into an ocean, a sea of knowledge and awakening. James, it's exciting, isn't it?
It is, and then you can draw the point out that, and this is what I do. I go, well, if lamestream science religion rubbishes and dismisses is so dismissive of ESP, of telepathy, of psychic abilities, then why are the intelligence agencies so steeped in it? We talked about the Soviet Union before. One of the formative books I read when I was a boy was Psychic Discoveries in the Soviet Union. It was one of
Yes, I have that.
that's one of the classics of all time, where the Soviets were so deeply, they were going to remote villages in the Urals to find these people, Daryl.
And as the science community, so-called, and even the popular press would mock astrologers, or they'd pe put people out there like for public ridicule purposes. At the same time, the Pentagon was putting all this funding into Stanford University for psi research, PSI, remote viewing, Stanford Research. You
Stanford
know the story
researchers, oh
better
yeah, oh
than I.
totally.
They
And
were
you,
they so they were okay with it,
they were
but
okay with
for
it,
us,
but
not no.
publicly for the unwashed masses. And I like the point that you've made on a number of occasions in the past, recently with Masaki, when you did an interview with him, is the malign influence of certain people in the field, that Dave McGowan and others, that just make a point of trying to say that there was no organic beat movement. There was no organic rock and roll movement. It was all Tavistock. It was all control. That's nonsense because,
Right.
Jim Morrison himself said the devil resides in Los Angeles, right? And
He
when you
got
look,
off the carousel,
he
just
got
like
off.
John Lennon.
And when you look at the ideas and the concepts they were putting out, which was so anti-authoritarian, so anti-control. And nowadays, if you look at what passes for pop culture today, where it's all even the Babylonian Numidian aspects, which you just discussed earlier, that's just in our face. It's just getting into us subconsciously. But back then, you had people that really had a message, and they were the ones that were the most stigmatized, the most dismissed as radical lefties, et cetera, et cetera.
There was a counterculture. There was an organic forms of resistance that was took shape not just in the music, but in our diet, our food, our housing, our relationships. That's true. Feminism was coming out back then. All these and our approach to technologies and even the advances in what became in the computing sciences were all coming out of the counterculture. And I can only I'd be interested in your opinion on this, James. The only reason that or the only explanation that I can come up with is why some synthetic author like Dave McGowan and there's other people like that who say, yeah, the Beatles were Tavistock total is that that movement was so powerful, so profound. John Lennon, for example, Jimi Hendrix, is that they want these the handlers of today in the 21st century want to make sure that the younger generation will never connect with it because it's going to be uncool and it's going to be, hey, boomer, or that's dad rock. It's passé.
Or that's Illuminati, right?
It's Satanist and it's backward masking. Maybe there were elements of that. But so I think it's very important for me to call out certain individuals because they always come into my comments in YouTube and I always disparage them. I'm very open. Dave McGowan was a limited hangout. I listened to all his interviews on YouTube. The guy sounded like a pothead. He was a construction worker, which is good, right? And I know I'm a professional writer. You cannot work 12 hours construction a day and then write books at the same time. So he was handed a file. And there's another woman, a writer today who fills that certain function. Her name's Annie Jacobson. She's the one that's been doing this series on mind control,
Area
all
51.
the stuff that you and I, James, knew 20 years ago. And it's the same process of, okay, we're discovering it and we're serving it up to you. And this is how it is. Case closed. No, case open. And there's going to be a James Bartley doppelganger coming out of the intelligence community any day soon. They always double you, not W. Bush, but they doppelganger you. There's going to be a Hamamoto clone fairly soon, who's going to be out there and being promoted, I predict.
Well, eventually, because I don't say this in an elitist sense, but as far as I hate terms like truthers and activists, but generally in our field, okay, use a nebulous term, Asians are radically underrepresented, Daryl. There's just,
Right.
and Pacific Islanders, and there's just not many of us. Well, there
I'm
are a
like
few
a
stalwarts
you and
out
me, we're
there.
like talking horses.
That's right. Same with Masaki. It's like, whoa, Wilbur, like Mr. Ed, you know what I mean? That's so, but we what's the one of the values which I believe comes into play here is we can look at things from a cultural perspective, which if someone is just grown up in American society that doesn't have that ethnic non-European heritage background, well, excuse me, non-Pacific or Asian background may not have that perspective. And so, all perspectives are good. Let's not lose the European heritage, which they're trying to eradicate. Let's not lose
Oh no.
our individual, cultural identities within when we realize, Daryl, that there is this amongst us and within us, this reptilian hybridized elite, which comes in the form of Asians, which comes in the form of Africans, which comes in the form of Europeans, right? And they're all literally out to get us. When we can unify from that standpoint, oh, wait a minute, I see right through your mask. I don't care what race you appear to be. You're a different species. Bugger off, right? And then we create our own studies. We create our own institutions independent of them. That's when we start to, we start to break away, so to speak. And
absolutely. And that cohort or that audience, if you will, in this part of the world that you're alluding to, sponsors and radio syndicators know that it's not been tapped. And I'm going to tap it. That's where the doppelganger, some synthetic knockoff of me, they'll try to put that person. But that woman or that man most likely doesn't have the chops. Right. They try to clone Alex Jones. They try to clone a David Icke. They try to clone a George Webb. They're going to try to clone a James Bartley if they haven't already. Anybody who has a new idea that is really getting an attention is always doubled up. They're doppelgangered so they can handle them and then pass them off as the genuine article and get rid of the original. And then people won't be the wiser. So be careful of that, ladies and gentlemen. If you see someone like me who's given a rap, don't confuse me with Jordan Peterson or Brett Kingman, because I'm always trying to, people are trying to lump me in with these academic ass clowns who have nothing to do with me. That's why I ask you at the top of the show, don't try to understand me too quickly, because I am of the academic world, but I have nothing to do with these people that I'm will be lumped in with.
Yeah, that's, people are so habituated to labeling and stereotyping. Well, we've had a fascinating discussion, Daryl. I encourage all our listeners and viewers and members to really plug into Daryl's work. And definitely, I love the idea about the this academy program that you're developing, however you want to term it. But it's absolutely brilliant, and its time has come. So thank you for coming on, Daryl, and we'll have you back again.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much, James. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for sitting through an incredible learning experience. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah,
support
I agree.
Cosmic Switchboard.
And support Daryl's work, folks. And then to our dear listeners and viewers out there, wherever you may be, whatever you may be doing, have a very pleasant time, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now. Because this is a frequency war.